It's Central Time. I'm Veronica Bickert.
And I'm Rob Farage. You're with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, a look at gospel music and the civil rights movement here in the Midwest.
First, debate continues today about the possibility of a right-to-work law in Wisconsin. A Senate committee started a hearing on the proposed legislation this morning. Testimony is set to run until 7 p.m., followed by a committee vote. Protests are also taking place today at the state capitol.
Right-to-work is the latest political twist in a state that's seen a lot of turmoil in the last 4 years. But what are the political implications of right-to-work in the state, and what does it mean for a governor who's widely expected to announce a presidential bid in the coming month or two?
Joe Heim joins us now. He's a professor of political science at UW-La Crosse. Joe, welcome back to Central Time.
Good afternoon, Veronica.
Well, back in May of 2012, Governor Walker told reporters at the state Republican Party convention that he had, quote, no interest in pursuing right-to-work legislation in this state. Now, in recent months, Governor Walker has called this issue a distraction. Now he's expected to sign this bill if it makes it to his desk. So the question, why did the governor change course?
Well, it's you could depend on whether you listen to him or listen to the Republicans in general. He's arguing that that the Republicans in the legislature are the primary motive behind this, and they're the ones that have been pushing it. He's been reluctant, but obviously he's changed his mind. I think it was the Milwaukee Journal yesterday that PolitiFact said that he's done a total flip on this. His position from last fall in the election was, although he never said he was going to veto it, he certainly indicated it wasn't on his agenda, that he didn't want it to get to his desk. In fact, I think he was quoted as saying, I'm not supporting this. And yet, obviously, he has changed his mind on this thing.
Right. As you said, PolitiFact did give Scott Walker a full flop for that. They called it a major reversal of position. What kind of effect could this have on him politically?
Well, in the state, I think because this is early in his term, you would think that by the time, at least if history is correct, he had a similar situation with Act 10 4 years ago. And initially, I think if an election had been held, he probably would have been recalled. But by the time the election was actually held, he won a recall election. He got elected last fall. So I think the perception that over time this opposition to this tends to dissipate. So he's this may be the timing. And frankly, if he's going to run for the presidency, I don't think he wants this type of a potential negative reaction, thousands of people protesting perhaps. I don't think he wants that to follow him around on the campaign trail.
Now, given the pretty substantial majorities in the GOP and the Assembly and the Senate, it seems as though this thing is a shoo-in to pass pretty easily. But do you see any conceivable way where that's not the scenario that plays out?
I think it's starting in the Senate, Veronica, because it's a closer margin. I think it's 1914 there. And there are some senators that had said some reluctances, at least one senator, I believe, that said he's going to vote against it. So they have one or two votes that they could lose. The Assembly at 63 votes, they can lose a whole, 12 of them and still get something passed, basically. So it's starting in the Senate, I think, because if there's any chance of stopping this, that's probably where it would have happened. But Senator Fitzgerald, the majority leader, has already said he's got the votes, he's counted heads, and that's why he wants to go ahead with it at this point. I think the fear is that if this was dragged out over months, conceivably people would change their mind, or there would be campaigns in opposition to it, letter-writing campaigns and whatever. And so the quicker they get this done, the better. This reminds me, by the way, of Act 10, the way it was done, trying to get it done and, fast-tracking it and get it done as quickly as possible.
Now, there are hearings going on today at the Capitol. Do you expect anything that happens there to affect the vote coming up in the Senate?
No, I don't think so. The fact that they're having hearings just for one day and they're going to be voting on it the next day clearly indicates that that they're ready to move on this thing. One of the arguments that one of the senators, Republican senators, said is that, well, this has been discussed for years and there's no reason to spend a lot of time on it. Well, to be honest, I'm not sure that's true. I think if you had if you talked to the average voter in Wisconsin and said right to work, they'd go, huh, what does that mean? I don't think a lot of people really fully understand the implications of it and, frankly, the politics of it.
Now, you said that this reminds you, in the way it's unfolding, of Act 10. And I wonder if you think that that helps or hurts anybody's cause in this particular case. Obviously, it was a big dramatic moment for Wisconsin on the national stage and here at home. But politically, does that memory coming back favor anybody?
I don't think anybody's going to see the same kind of reaction. I certainly don't think the Democratic senators are going to try to leave the state and try to block it. It's just not in the cards because of the numbers, basically. So it's not going to have the same reaction, and I don't think labor is going to turn out and hundreds of thousands of people try to block this. To be honest, I think this has been in the winds for months.
Now, the senators can't leave the state this time, right? This isn't a fiscal matter. Is that correct? How you understand it?
Yeah, it's a fiscal matter. The voting is different. Right now, if they pass it with one vote, that would be sufficient. They don't need, the fiscal, I think they require one or two more votes. I'm not sure of that. They require at least one or two more votes than what they would for just a bare majority. So it's not one of those things. There's not really any fiscal impact on this.
Should it pass, Wisconsin will be, I think, the 25th state to have a right-to-work law on the books. Do we have any idea about how that reflects on the politicians who are leading it at the time?
Well, it remains to be seen. The Republicans, majority of them have pretty safe districts, and this is, frankly, a Republican issue. It's one of those issues that the arguments on both sides are actually pretty compelling. It's kind of interesting, but the politics of it is very clear. The Republicans are generally pro-business, especially big business. WMC, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, Chambers of Commerce in Wisconsin, have long supported this. And they're the pro-business party, so this is kind of natural for them to move on this type of thing, especially with the margins that they have. So the politics of it really are probably the underlying theme of this whole thing. The Republicans have said things like this provides freedom for workers, which, of course, who's opposed to freedom? The union side says basically that they produce a lot of results that are better for workers. Well, ultimately, both sides are going to pick the arguments that they want, but this is ultimately a political battle.
Do you have any sense how right to work has gone over in terms of public support nationally?
It varies with the state considerably in terms of how strong the unions are. I think a lot of people, though, question whether or not people should be forced to join a union. I haven't seen any recent polls on this, but if you frame it in one way, this is freedom of voters, workers, they should have a right to choose whether they do or don't want to join a union. The arguments against it are a little more sophisticated, a little more difficult to explain to people. It has to do with the logic of collective action, and that collectively workers banding together can actually improve their wages and conditions rather than individually negotiating. But essentially, I think the public is generally pretty split in the country on it. Depends on how the question is phrased.
Now, going back to Act 10 again, in the big protest at the Capitol, Wisconsin was very much in the national spotlight then. There was a lot of drama going on, of course, and Governor Walker was beginning to come to national attention. But do you have a sense whether the nation at large is paying attention right now?
I don't think the nation as a whole is paying attention to it. When you've got states that are, 24 states already, as you said, are on the side, this is old hat to a lot of people. It's not that like that new of an idea. It isn't quite like Act 10 in the sense of going after unions, these public sector unions. That was a pretty unique situation, frankly. But I think a lot of people see this a little bit more as a national issue. In other words, Governor Walker is thinking right for the presidency, and perhaps people that are a little more in the know, that are a little careful about putting out their votes for a particular candidate, will notice this. And I think the particular voters in the primaries in the United States are going to look at this and say, Governor Walker is a good pro-business Republican, and that's not going to hurt him. The general election, it's a little harder to guess at this, but generally union people, and for the most part, tend to vote Democratic anyway, so it's not going to be in a general election. It wouldn't be a major issue. I was looking at some numbers a couple months ago, and I noticed that about one-third of the respondents in a particular survey, I think it was the Marquette poll, voted for Governor Walker last November. So he, although that certainly isn't a majority, I would say he did fairly well amongst labor people then.
We're talking about politics, the politics of right to work in Wisconsin with political scientist Joe Heim. And you can join in with your questions and your comments at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this idea, this law? Do you think that right to work helps or hurts Governor Walker on the national stage? And what do you think this could mean for unions in Wisconsin? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll pick up that conversation in just a few moments. First, Cheryl Gasser joins us now. It's the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. You count on WPR for great discussions, and it's your gift of any amount that makes these discussions possible. You can give right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And hey, Rob, look at this. We heard from 23 members last hour. That's great. Thank you so much for those gifts. And our goal this hour is to get 30 pledges.
So support the station you love. If you are a new Central Time listener, a new Ideas Network listener, maybe you just discovered us in the last 6 months, the last year, maybe make your first ever pledge now to kick off this drive. Help us meet this goal when you give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And whether it's a three-minute news update or an in-depth talk show like Central Time, you hear about the topics that affect your life, and you hear about them here on Wisconsin Public Radio. Listeners like you help pay for the quality programs you hear every day. Help keep Central Time going strong. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And you decide the amount of your pledge. Every pledge matters. Every pledge helps pay for the programs you enjoy on Wisconsin Public Radio. And during this drive, you can ask for the I Love WPR t-shirt when you give $120 or more.
This really is a cool t-shirt. It's dark heather gray. It's USA made and printed right here in Wisconsin. So show your love for WPR and ask for this t-shirt when you give $120 or more. That's just $10 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
For me, it's really a sense of a connection to the world and the world of ideas. It keeps me informed. It keeps me thinking. I can't remember the number of times that I've had conversations with people saying, oh, I heard something this morning on Wisconsin Public Radio or National Public Radio. And then it's a way of having a very interesting discussion with other people about some of those ideas. And so I think that it keeps me informed and it keeps me thinking and is a way of engaging other people in important ideas. This is David Corey from Green Bay, Wisconsin, and Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for information in the arts, culture, politics, and the world.
Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552 to make your pledge during this winter membership drive. Rob and Veronica here with Cheryl Gasser asking for your support of WPR. Your gift of $10 or $15 a month, whatever amount you choose is the right amount.
Now, you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio year-round, and now donate the same way you listen by becoming a sustaining member. Make the decision once, and you'll make affordable contributions of, say, $10 or $20 a month for as long as you wish.
It's easy on your budget. It cuts down on paperwork. Don't put it off. Become a sustainer right now at WPR.org. or call 888-202-2552.
Now, you may have heard Wisconsin is having a debate about the level of funding for Wisconsin public broadcasting, and this could lead to a significant decrease in state support. And that funding has been essential to delivering programs like this one throughout the state.
Wisconsin Public Broadcasting is working hard to address this challenge as this budget process goes forward. And listener support really continues to be a vital part of the WPR budget. Your donation is more important than ever at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's people who listen, you, who provide the most significant share of WPR's budget. Your donation comes with no strings attached, and that means we can invest it in programs that deliver the greatest value to you every day.
Your contribution keeps independent public service radio on the air for you, for your entire community. Give now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you've been listening to WPR for a while without pledging, well, maybe you haven't given because you didn't know that we're listener supported. Well, we are. It's the single largest piece of our budget. It comes from you, the listener. Or maybe you wanted to listen for a while to see if you liked what you heard.
Well, you're still listening now, all these months later, all these years later, maybe. Mm-hmm. So how about a donation now? Your gift of $5 a month or whatever amount you choose does make a difference at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Once in a while, you actually get more than you pay for. And WPR is one place where that is true every single day. So won't you consider a gift of $2 a day to support the radio programs that you love?
It's hard to buy a lot for $2, but at WPR, $2 a day creates a lot of learning and music, news, and conversations. It works out to $60 a month. Make that gift right now at WPR.org. Or 888-202-2552.
We are looking for 28 pledges by 4 o'clock this afternoon in support of Central Time. Your pledge right now during this winter membership drive is just so very important.
And we're offering something special. Our brand new WPR t-shirt. Show off your Wisconsin Public Radio pride with the I Love WPR t-shirt. Make a pledge of $120 or more. That's $10 a month to ask for your very own brand new. The ink is dry, but it's otherwise still pretty new. The new WPR t-shirt. Make that pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We heard from Margaret in Brookfield who says, I don't go through a single day without listening to WPR, so I decided to become a member. Join Margaret. Thank you, Margaret. Join Margaret and become a member. Make your pledge of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We're talking about the politics of right-to-work legislation in Wisconsin with political scientist Joe Heim.
And you can join in with your questions and your comments at 800-642-1234. What do you think about this proposed change to the way unions work in Wisconsin? Do you think this right-to-work legislation would help or hurt Governor Walker on the national, maybe presidential stage? What does this all mean for unions and their influence in the state? Call 800-642-1234 or post in the Central Time Facebook page.
And Joe, we're going to get to calls in just a minute, but I want to ask you, Act 10 delivered a big blow to public sector unions in Wisconsin. What do you expect, should it pass, this so-called right-to-work legislation to do to private sector unions and to unions in general?
Well, it's you can't totally separate what's been going on in the country for the last dozen years or so. Unions have been on the decline for some time. In fact, the major reason unions had been steady is because of the public sector. I think if you wonder about the effects on unions, you simply have to look at WEAC. It was reported just the other day that their membership has dropped by half over the last 4 years, which really means it's far less compelling reason to be a member of a union. You can still join a union, but the fact is you would get the same benefits that through a union as you would if you were a non-union member. So the logic is that a person would drop union membership, and unions would become less powerful in Wisconsin. They are, frankly, everybody should know this, they're the major source of revenue for the Democratic Party. If you're a Republican, you obviously know that, and if you can undercut support for your opponent party, why not do it? So this would be one of the major, it would be a blow to the Democratic Party in the state of Wisconsin. I think that's pretty clear. And it would certainly be a blow to unions in general.
Well, the GOP is in power right now in the Assembly and the Senate here in Wisconsin already without a right to work right now and without the fruition of that. But what do you think would it mean for that that balance of power?
Well, this would add to support for, if in a relative sense, if support declines for the opponent party, obviously that's an advantage to you. So if you can cut off some of the funds or perhaps the voters, some of the voters that would be voting for Democrats because of this, that's a political advantage, frankly. So it adds to your advantage. I'm not sure that the Republicans need a big advantage at this point, given their numbers in the legislature and the fact that they have been the dominant party over the last couple of election cycles. But the fact is, you take advantage of everything you can, frankly. That's what they're doing.
We're going to go to the callers now. We've got Sam with us in Valley Junction. Hi, Sam.
Hi, how's it going?
Good,
hi,
thanks.
Sam. I just wanted to tell you, I know that Joe said it's fairly complicated to explain the situation against right to work. I was going to draw a parallel between a closed union shop and living in a certain state. I mean, obviously, if you're from outside Wisconsin and you're considering moving here, you have to look at the taxes we pay. And if you're not willing to pay those taxes, I guess you need to look at another state in order to live in that doesn't have as many services or nice roads and stuff that we do in the state. So the parallel is a closed union shop. The union has a function there, whether it's to represent people in contract talks, benefits, wages, training, and those things cost money. And so if you consider the dues a tax, you can see the parallel there that unions need to charge for those things. So,
okay.
And I don't think the state's going to tell people they can come to Wisconsin and not pay the taxes.
Sam, thanks a lot for your thoughts there. And Sam expressing his viewpoint there. Are there ways that people are getting the services, getting what they need on the job, and wanting to bypass unions right now, Joe?
Well, it's the decline. It's complicated to explain why the unions have declined in general, but the caller's correct that unions play a very prominent role in negotiating for workers and training. They're very prominent in encouraging a greater degree of safety in the part of workers, so they play a very important role, and collectively they're able to extract benefits that individuals are not able to do. And that's sort of what the advantage is, frankly, of having a union around. But overall, they have finding it more difficult. I think part of their problem in the last few years has been simply the unemployment rates. It's very hard to negotiate for higher salaries when the average workers out there have relatively flat wages. So they have not been in a particularly strong position since the Great Recession.
Now, this bill came up very quickly. It's being fast-tracked, and the session, I guess, hasn't technically started yet. Do you think that this is a sign of things to come, of more quickly moving legislation as we go along here?
I don't think so. I think the budget, the governor has been talking about wanting to get the budget done as quickly as possible, and I think he has other plans for traveling. But I don't think that this is, I think this is a unique situation, frankly. It's early in the session. In fact, somebody suggested the other day that maybe, as you well know, there's been an enormous amount of discussion about this budget and the issues and 1,800 pages, and we're just finding out about some of the little details in there. This actually would be a distraction from those stories, basically. However, I see this as going to be over relatively quickly. But I don't see it's a pattern necessary. They're going to go into a special session to any great degree this year. I think the budget actually may get done a little early, but not. I wouldn't count on it being much earlier than normal.
Well, Joe, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Well, thank you very much.
We've been speaking with Joe Heim, professor of political science at UW La Crosse. This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Ferret. In just a few minutes, our guest calls gospel music the soundtrack to the civil rights movement. He'll share some gospel greats from Milwaukee and other Midwestern cities.
But first, this is the Wisconsin Public Radio Winter Membership Drive. Veronica Rickert here with Cheryl Gasser. As a Wisconsin Public Radio listener, you know you're always going to get something worthwhile when you turn on the radio. Now is the time for you to put a value on this program and everything else you hear on WPR. By making a gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Now, Veronica, we have 23 minutes left in this hour, and we are looking for 23 pledges to stay on track for our hourly goal. That's why your support helps keep this station strong. Help us meet this hourly goal. Help pay for Central Time when you give any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
As a public radio listener, you're smart. You want to know what's going on, both in the news and in the culture around us. And we're right there with you, exploring all the angles on Central Time.
We are very grateful for your support. It makes all the stories that you hear, the great interviews on this show possible. So give now. It makes a big difference. Do it now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
During this membership drive, you can get the I Love WPR t-shirt when you give $120. That shakes down to $10 a month or more. Your donation supports the programs that you count on. And you can also get this cool and comfy t-shirt.
It's a dark heather gray with a red heart, 100% cotton, USA made. It's even printed right here in the great state of Wisconsin. So show your love for WPR. Get that t-shirt, $10 a month or more. Pledge now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
WPR has a reputation for quality and for substance. Your contributions in the past have gotten us to where we are today, and your pledge today will take this kind of strength into the future.
Your dollars will give Wisconsin Public Radio the means to keep the quality and substance you count on in our programs every single day. So pledge your support now for Central Time and everything you enjoy on Wisconsin Public Radio. Make that pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your call is important to us, so please leave a message after the beep.
I don't think that people fully understand that Wisconsin Public Radio is really the basis from which it all began. I'm constantly telling people that you've got a tremendous resource here. You don't have to contribute. I mean, you can go ahead and take the service for free. I tell them, I contribute so you can listen. That always gets them. Here's this tremendous amount of information, which is commercial-free. It's annoyance-free, certainly. And I've got this terrible aversion to commercials, both on television and especially radio. I don't think the people really understand the value that you have right here just flipping on the radio.
Make your donation in support of the programs that you count on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. I'm Veronica Rickert with Cheryl Gasser, and we're asking for your gift to listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio during this winter membership drive. Whether your pledge is $5 a month or maybe $100 a month feels more like what you'd like to pledge, we appreciate and we count on your gift.
And you can make it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Here on WPR, you get unbiased news, high-quality entertainment, informative talk programs, great music, and so much more. You get a rich experience no matter when you tune in.
This breadth and depth is possible thanks to listener contributions like yours. So make that pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
When you listen to Wisconsin Public Radio, you can be assured that we always have your interests at heart. We can continue to serve our listeners and communities because of the support we receive from members, including the 600 members of WPR's 9XM Leadership Circle.
9XM members support WPR with gifts of $1,200 or more a year. That's $100 a month. To make a leadership gift, go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
You love Wisconsin Public Radio because it's your source for intelligent radio. And there are costs associated with high-quality radio like this. And that is where you come in. Your support is so important.
Making a pledge is quick and it's easy. You'll be finished in no time at all. Your contribution of any amount, maybe $5 a month, maybe $10 a month, is what makes it happen at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You can give the amount that's right for you. And if you need some help figuring that out, consider this. Let's say you hear three things a day that you're really glad you heard. I learn something every single day on Central Time alone, but then you also get Joy Cardine and Larry Mueller and Kathleen Dunn and the NPR newscasts and Wisconsin Public Radio news. So say, out of all those things you enjoy, you hear three things a day you're glad you heard. You pay a dime for each one of those, and that would work out to $10 a month. What a bargain. So make that contribution right now in whatever amount's right for you. Do it at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We've got about 20 more pledges to go, about 17, 18 minutes to get them. So make your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Every single pledge really helps.
And this pledge drive, we're offering something very special. Show your support for WPR with our brand new I Love WPR t-shirt. And you know you do. You love Wisconsin Public Radio. This t-shirt is yours for a pledge of $120 a year. That's $10 a month when you pledge WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And if you're a sustaining member, we really want to thank you. Why not make today the day that you increase your support of WPR by $5 a month or whatever amount you decide on at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We've heard this afternoon from Margaret in Brookfield and Joe in Onalaska and Jason in Greendale. It's great to hear from listeners all around the great state of Wisconsin. Make your pledge now in any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and thank you.
Gospel music has a long history in the Midwest, especially in urban areas. Chicago, Detroit, Milwaukee, and it played a key role in the history of the civil rights movement. Our next guest is in Milwaukee today to share some of that history.
Robert Maravich is the founder and editor-in-chief of the Journal of Gospel Music, and he hosts Gospel Memories on Chicago's WLUW. His book, A City Called Heaven, Chicago and the Birth of Gospel Music, is due out next month. He'll be giving a talk at the UW-Milwaukee about the connection between gospel music and civil rights. That's today at 4:30 at UW-Milwaukee's Engelman Hall. Bob, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on the show.
Well, gospel music has been called the soundtrack of the civil rights movement. So how closely were the music and the movement linked together?
Very much so. I mean, if you think about the spiritual, it was very much probably the original protest song, if you will. They had dual messages. So if you heard somebody singing Follow the Drinking Gourd, for example, it might also mean to follow the North Star, which was part of one of the dippers, and that would be the way to go north. So you have songs like, All God's Children Got Shoes, the spiritual said not everybody is going to heaven. And so you had these messages in the spirituals, and so it was sort of natural for them to be picked up and used in a way to express frustration with the way things were in the civil rights era as it was in the slavery era.
Well, a lot of gospel songs you think of in terms of redemption and freedom and talking about, being saved from the Pharaoh. Are there lots of things where there's a biblical meaning to it and then a very current day meaning all at the same time?
Absolutely. And in fact, whether you're talking about spirituals or the gospel songs of the 20th century written by people like Thomas A. Dorsey and Charles Tindley, they did have that sense that there was always a better day. I always like to say about gospel is that unlike the blues, where the blues has, it's a struggle, but there's not necessarily a solution, or if there is, perhaps it's not a socially acceptable solution. Where gospel, there was always a solution, whether it was getting me through today or that there will just simply be a better day in the future. And so how natural it was for these songs to be picked up and used, whether they were in church or whether in the march, and they were written that way. It was really written to speak to people who were cast away from society and given them a language to express their frustrations and to have hope for a better day.
Well, we definitely want to get listening to some music. Now, you shared some songs with us, and we're going to start off with a group called the Supreme Angels from Milwaukee. This is called Run to the Rock.
Tell me what you're gonna do.
What you gonna do?
Was on fire.
What you gonna do?
What you gonna do? Jesus come.
What you gonna do?
Send a man.
What you gonna do?
What you gonna do?
What you gonna do?
Run to the rock.
Run to the rock.
No hiding place.
No hiding place.
Okay, Run to the Rock there from the Supreme Angels. Can you give us a little of the backstory behind the Supreme Angels?
Sure. Well, that was probably the most famous group to come out of Milwaukee. Howard Slim Hunt, who was one of the lead singers, came out of another group from Milwaukee. But these are migrants. And one of the things about gospel music is that much of the music came from people that came from the South during the Great Migration and settled in places like Milwaukee and Chicago and Detroit, and brought their religion and music with them. And the Supreme Angels they're still active today. Howard Hunt has passed on, and Sugar Hightower and some of the others, but there is a brand new group of Supreme Angels that are going to be putting out an album in about a month.
So you said gospel came to the Midwest via the Great Migration. Was this fertile ground for gospel to grow and expand here in the Midwest?
It was, in the sense of coming to the urban environments. What would happen is that as people came north from the Great Migration, they expected things to be better than they were in the South. Now, they were and they weren't. They just hit different types of segregation, unemployment, poor housing, and discrimination from within and without, not only from white communities, but some of the established black community. People did not necessarily like the southern ways of their brethren and felt that they were a little too country or a little uncouth, and would, in their own way, discriminate against them. And so you had a people who felt like strangers in a strange land, and they turned to this music, and really the gospel music community, the church community, to sort of have their own sense of being, their own sense of establishing themselves in the North. And so they also grabbed some of the urban music, the jazz, the blues, and incorporated that into the gospel. And that's kind of what created what became the 20th century sound of the African American church.
So how did that music change as they came north and brought different traditions with them? Did it become sort of more inclusive of other traditions, as you were saying there, bringing in jazz?
Eventually it did. Initially, not so much, but as artists began to go between churches. So if a Baptist-bred quartet would sing in a Pentecostal church for a Pentecostal audience, they might pick up some of the Pentecostal styles, the improvisational tradition, or the extended musical components, and they would take that with them. And in fact, during what they call the gospel's golden era, but between 1945 and 1965, was the rise of the quartets. And you'll hear the quartets. They came from a very sort of Baptist background, Methodist, but they had learned so much from the Pentecostal and the spiritual and the holiness churches that the music of those quartets really embraced several denominations all at once.
I want to highlight another one of the tracks you sent our way. This next artist, I think, from Detroit, and this one directly linked to the civil rights movement. This is Will Hairston's March on to Montgomery.
Don't let Sheriff Jim Clark turn you round. Don't let Sheriff Jim Clark turn you round. March on to Montgomery.
And now here I hear some of the blues crossover you talked about, but I wonder, I mean, this is an era where we're seeing a lot of folk music taking up political protests throughout this time. Was there a lot of crossover there, too?
There was. In fact, you'll find a lot of the folk artists of the early 1960s were very much into gospel music, and some of the gospel artists started to hear the folk artists and incorporate into their own work. And somebody like Will Hairston, who eventually became a minister, he was one of the early ones to sort of build story songs around issues that were happening in civil rights. So there, talking about the march from Selma to Montgomery, he also did songs about Martin Luther King. He did an amazing tribute to Emmett Till and the death of Emmett Till. He did songs about Kennedy. He just wanted to tell the story in the old-fashioned ballad way, where he would take a current event and kind of turn it into a bluesy gospel song that had a message, generally speaking, that, you know, that the people who were evil were going to get their just desserts and the good were going to triumph.
And we've got one more song we're going to listen to next. This is Chicago Staple Singers with Freedom Highway. You told us that this one recently got a CD release. What makes this album stand out to you?
It's in a couple of ways. One is that this is a particular song, this Freedom Highway, is written by Pop Staples about the Selma to Montgomery march. But it was recorded in an African-American church on Chicago's South Side, a very prominent church, New Nazareth. And so you get a sense of this album of what it was like to be in a African-American church in the 1960s at the epitome of gospel, traditional gospel music, hearing the choir, hearing the audience or the congregation, and hearing, you know, an iconic group such as the Staple Singers just turn out a wonderful program. So much history right there in probably about 40 minutes of music.
And the lead into that one, I wouldn't have been surprised to hear that in a pop rock song of the era either. So there's some more crossover this time into the rock world.
Absolutely. In fact, there's a number of rock artists who would say that they were inspired. Somebody like Little Richard, who we often look at as a kind of a pioneer in rock and roll, learned so much of his own musical style from Marion Williams, who was a gospel singer with the Ward Singers and the Stars of Faith back in the 50s and 60s.
How much would you say that gospel has changed and also stayed true to its roots as we look back, you know, to the pinnacle, maybe back in the 60s, and also the Great Migration? What does it look like today?
Today, it's been very much influenced by the contemporary Christian music. I think you have the rise of megachurches that are multicultural, multi-denominational, and so you have a real rise in what is called praise and worship music. And so while the praise and worship music does draw on contemporary Christian music, what we might hear in, say, a white church, if you will, it still has these gospel components. And what I mean by that is some of the original rhythms, some of the vocal techniques, what they call melisma, which is sort of frills and flowers, worrying notes or improvising on it. That component is still very much present in the praise and worship music. But also the choir is back on the rise. The gospel choir, you're hearing more churches and mass choirs on the radio than you had in recent times. And so that sort of sense of the traditional gospel choir is making a resurgence. And I hope that continues.
Bob, thanks a lot for joining us, and enjoy your stay in Wisconsin.
Thank you very much for having me, and I want to say thanks to Judith Beal and the Religious Studies Program at UWM for having me. They're the great ones to convene this kind of session. I really appreciate it.
That was Robert Maravich, founder and editor-in-chief of the Journal of Gospel Music. He's speaking today at 4:30 in Milwaukee, and I believe the program includes some gospel music live there as well. It'll be at UW-Milwaukee's Engelman Hall.
Coming up, Martha Barnett, co-host of Away With Words, joins us to talk about some of the most difficult to pronounce words in the English language.
First, a reminder, this is Wisconsin Public Radio's winter membership drive, pivotal day one. We count on your support. It's a huge piece of the funding for Central Time, for all the programs you enjoy on the Ideas Network, on Wisconsin Public Radio. The drive is time for you to take action. Become a WPR contributor with a gift right now at WPR.org. or 888-202-2552.
Let's check in on our goal for the hour. We are still looking for 19 more pledges in about the next 5 minutes. Make your donation now. Get us off to a great start and support the programs you enjoy at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Let's look at what we've talked about today so far already on Central Time. We'll look at the political fallout from the proposed what's called right-to-work legislation, and then a check of Midwestern culture, a talk around in Milwaukee, amazing history of gospel music and the civil rights movement. It's an example of the range of the Wisconsin-focused coverage of the fun news or the fun culture stuff and the serious news stuff we bring you each and every day here on Central Time.
Well, your support makes the many topics that we cover every day on the show possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you, that feels comfortable in your budget, that reflects how much you listen, how passionate you are, and then make that pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You give to WPR to support the programs you love. As an added incentive, we have a special thing during this winter membership drive. It's the I Love WPR t-shirt. It is yours when you give $120 or more. That's $10 a month.
The t-shirt is dark gray. It's USA made and printed right here in Wisconsin. You can ask for your t-shirt and show your support for Wisconsin Public Radio when you make that pledge at WPR.org. or 888-202-2552.
Wisconsin Public Radio provides me with in-depth, accurate news from around the state. I also like the music, too. I really like being a sustainer because it is relatively painless. I have a monthly withdrawal from my credit card. I don't have to think about it other than the fact that, oh, it's that time of year, it's time for me to up my pledge. When I'm not listening to a public radio station, I'm probably not listening to radio. I'm Rob from Madison, Wisconsin, and I've been a sustainer of Wisconsin Public Radio for many years. I encourage you to join me in sustaining Wisconsin Public Radio so we can keep this precious resource alive and well.
Pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Rob and Veronica here asking for your support of WPR during this winter membership drive. Maybe your gift is $5 a month or $10 or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose is the right amount.
Consider sharing your appreciation of the lifelong learning you get from Wisconsin Public Radio. Make a 9XM Leadership Circle gift of $100 a month. That's $1,200 a year, and provide an important piece of the funding for the programs that we all rely on.
Make that leadership gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You don't have to live in a big city to have access to everything the world has to offer. You get it all right here on Wisconsin Public Radio.
Yeah, whether you live in a small town or a big city, when you listen to WPR, you are in the global public square, hearing from artists, reporters, experts in the forefront of their fields, because you appreciate this access to the best that Wisconsin has to offer and the world has to offer. Make your pledge of support to WPR at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
It's day one of our winter membership drive. We're still looking for 17 more pledges in about the next 2 minutes, so make your gift to support the WPR programs that you enjoy and rely on every day. Your pledge right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. It makes a difference.
Now, maybe you've heard that the proposed state budget includes a significant cut in state support for Wisconsin public broadcasting. You tell us that you value the lasting impact of public broadcasting programs, news, conversations, music, and entertainment.
That's why Wisconsin Public Broadcasting, including WPR, is working hard to address the budget challenges as the process goes forward. Meanwhile, listener support is more important than ever, so make your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Remember, if you pledge $10 a month or more, you get the brand new iHeart WPR t-shirt. Levi from Lodi picked one up. Levi says, who doesn't want an I Love WPR t-shirt? This is my first time donating. Levi, thank you so much. We're glad you appreciate WPR. Thanks for supporting it. Enjoy the t-shirt. How about you? Make your pledge, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
The key thing to know here is that a pledge of any amount matters. A pledge of any amount makes a difference, and it's going to give you a great feeling when you turn on the radio. Make that pledge at WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And thank you.